Good afternoon or morning or evening. Hopefully this time my internet stays up the whole session, because last time it didn't and that sucked and it made me mad. But here we are. Fingers crossed that the electron fairies keep the electrons moving. So it is the 7th of March in the year of our Lord, or your Lord, or some Lord, 2024. I'm Chase Cunningham, Dr. Zero Trust, if you want to be cool or whatever, and seeing what we can do here. So let's cover some material. It's obviously an election year. We are already seeing the escalation of what you would typically consider to be vectors of attacks and threats against the United States, and there's an escalation going on. Now, a lot of times people can make the, I guess you'd call it, logical assumption that this cyber stuff that typically goes on nation states is kind of below grade. Like, you don't see that stuff. It is, not something that is kind of advertise. We don't run into it too often. It goes on in dark alleys and back rooms and whatever. Well, what you've seen lately is the escalation of these types of attacks that are coming into light. And yeah, the AT&T thing, they said it was due to a patch. I don't buy that for a second. I believe, and this is conjecture, this is my thoughts, this is based on my experience, etc., that was one of the first kind of touchy-feely things that was done to see how well our infrastructure would actually stand up at the telecommunications level should a foreign nation decide to act during our actual elections, which are coming in November. The Super Tuesday, interestingly enough, was yesterday or 2 days ago. It's Thursday, 2 days ago. And what happened on Super Tuesday? The Instagram, the gram, whatever you want to call it for you young folks, the gram goes down and Meta goes down. Well, why would that happen? Well, where do a lot of people get their information about where to vote and when to vote and how to vote and who's voted and all the other bullshit that people deal with? They get it from the gram and from Facebook, from people sharing on social. Both of those go down on Super Tuesday. Kind of strange. And then you're also seeing the escalation of other things going on where we're losing healthcare systems. Like, all of these little pinpricks that are taking place for a very good reason. If you're not aware of this stuff, you're asleep. You should be paying attention. Now, I'm not like peddling FUD and whatever. I'm just being real and honest with folks. I happen to be lucky enough to have some insight into this without getting myself in trouble. But be aware. Don't be afraid, but be aware. Know that there are foreign nations and adversaries that are doing things to try and manipulate what's going on in the United States at the national level. Expect additional attacks to come. Expect to have fake advertisements. Expect to have deep fakes. Know that our telecommunications infrastructure is exceptionally vulnerable to attack. Plan for these things. If you're not planning for them, you're unprepared. And the worst thing that can happen to you or to me or to anyone is when an attack occurs that you are totally unprepared for what is required to survive and thrive on the far side of that attack. It's coming. It may not be the cyber Pearl Harbor stuff that people have talked about. I don't think that that's a real thing, but you're going to see increased escalation of attack types for the foreseeable future. It's just going to happen. And you're already seeing it. Now, because it is an election year, let's talk about some of the other shenanigans that have gone on, which are indicative of the type of posturing that politicians do. Say that fast. Politician posturing, ba 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 ba, around this time of year. The White House published a fact sheet, and this is as of February 28th. President Biden issues executive order to protect Americans' sensitive personal data. Now, why wasn't this published like decades ago? And how is this even a thing? Don't we have like privacy laws and whatever? So let's just read through this for a minute. Today, President Biden will issue an executive order to protect Americans' sensitive personal data from exploitation by countries of concern. The executive order, which marks the most significant executive action any president has ever taken to protect Americans' data security, sorry, authorizes the Attorney General to prevent the large-scale transfer of Americans' personal data to countries of concern and provide safeguards around other activities that can give those countries access to American sensitive data. This should have been written on toilet paper. So let's go a little further into this, because all of this stuff has already happened. It's already been breached. This goes on all day, every day. This is one of the greatest examples I've seen so far of, like, let's publish some shit and hope nobody really knows what's going on, and then we'll act like we did a good thing. To protect American sensitive personal data, President Biden is directing the Department of Justice to issue regulations, which we already have in a whole bunch of ways, that establish clear protections. Again, we already have that for American sensitive personal data from access and exploitation by countries of concern. What about the countries of concern working with American companies to take that data and put it overseas? These protections will extend to genomic, biometrics, sounds like 23andMe, personal health data, geolocation data, financial data, and certain kinds of personal identifiers. We call that PII and HIPAA and whatever else. We already have all this shit. They will prevent, no they won't, the large-scale transfer of that data to countries of concern, which have a track record of collecting and misusing data on Americans, China. The Department of Justice will issue regulations, which we already have, that establish greater protection of sensitive government-related data, including geolocation information on sensitive government sites and information about military members. Okay. Departments of Health and Human Services, Defense and Veterans Affairs, which have all already been breached by foreign nations, to help ensure federal agents, grants, contracts, and awards are not used to facilitate access to American sensitive health data, which has already been breached by countries of concern, including via companies located in the United States. These actions not only align with the U.S. longstanding support for the trusted free flow of data, but are also consistent with the U.S. commitment to an open internet with strong and effective protections for blah, 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 a bunch of political bullshit. So, I mean, this could have been written on toilet paper. It's all these regulations already exist. All the laws are already there. There's already a whole bunch of privacy things going on. It's already been well established that none of this stuff works, but the government's coming up with something to throw out during an election year to say, look what we did. And again, for the record, I am not a political affiliated person. I'm a member of the Mind Your Own Fucking Business Party. But like, this is the same stuff that just flows out there that is, it's posturing, it's lipstick on a pig. Now, interestingly enough, on February 27th, the White House also released this thing called PCAST, P-C-A-S-T. Yeah, releases report on strategy for cyber physical resilience, which we already have that. Today, the President's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology, PCAST, and I have the report and I'll put it in here as well, released a report on fortifying the nation's cyber physical systems. Mm-hmm. These systems are the integrated digital and infrastructural resources that are crucial to Americans' daily lives, including the electrical grid, public water systems, internet, telecommunications, banking systems, air traffic control, and much more. We call those critical infrastructure and SCADA and the things that we've already been talking about for years. President Biden has issued a historic action to strengthen our nation's cybersecurity to create a more equitable, what does that have to do with anything, safe and resilient landscape in which every American can thrive and prosper. Okay. His leadership has spurred a whole-of-government approach to strengthen the nation's cyber-physical infrastructure. Blah, 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 blah. The Biden-Harris administration has advanced bold actions with a national cybersecurity strategy through the Office of the National Cyber Director. PCAST recommendations include establishing measures of resilience and setting performance goals that set minimum delivery objectives for critical services. We already have that. Bolstering and coordinating research and development to better understand weaknesses of existing frameworks and blah, blah, blah. Don't we have CISA and NIST and a bunch of other shit that we're spending money on? Breaking down silos and strengthening government cyber physical resilience. We already have that too. Developing greater industry, board, CEO, and executive accountability. You have to file an 8K now. So again, all this stuff has already been out there. It's already been published. This is more, check us out. Look what we're doing for you as Americans. And again, it's this. I don't give a shit if it was Republicans or whatever. I don't think Trump could spell cyber. But anyway, I don't know that Biden necessarily could either. But anyway, like, let's just be real about this stuff. This is totally useless and it's just posturing. So be aware of that. And don't base your vote on this type of stuff. Please, like, look deeper into it. You're being peddled to. Just know that. Hugging Face, which is weird. Hugging Face, this article is in Ars Technica, or Ars Technica, whatever, by Dan Gooden, who writes a lot of really good stuff. Hugging Face, the GitHub of AI, hosted code that backdoored user devices. malicious submissions have been a fact of life for code repositories. AI is no different. Correct. And again, it's not AI. Code updated to AI developer platform Hugging Face. Has anybody seen Hugging Face? I don't know what that is, but I'm going to have to look it up. Covertly installed backdoors and other types of malware on end user machines, researchers from security firm JFrog said Thursday in a report that is a harbinger for what's to come. In all, JFrog researchers said they found roughly 100 submissions that performed hidden and unwanted actions when they were downloaded and loaded onto end user devices. Most of the flagged machine learning models, all of which went undetected by Hugging Face. Is that a name of a company or an open source thing? I'm not sure. Appeared to be benign proofs of concept uploaded by researchers or curious users. So I can see how that might play in there. JFrog researchers said, I don't know why I'm a problem with researchers, blah, researchers said in an email that 10 of them were truly malicious and that they performed actions that actually compromised user security when loaded. One model drew particular concern because it opened a reverse shell, that's a big bad no-no, that gave a remote device access on the internet, full control to an end user's device. Uh-oh. When JFrog researchers loaded the model into a lab machine, the submission indeed loaded a reverse shell, but took no further action. Well, it loaded a reverse shell. So, whoops. So this is interesting. I don't know what this thing is, but it's all here. It's got the code sort of stuff. Hugging Face. I know we're on a live stream here, so I'm actually going to do like one of them live stream thingies and look it up. Hugging Face, the AI community building the future. Hugging Face is a French-American company based in New York City. It develops computer tools for the building applications of machine learning. Okay, so yeah, let's look at what they have here. The AI community building the future, models, data sets, spaces, docs, models, spaces, data sets. Okay, the home of machine learning, collaboration platform. So sort of an open sourcey, you know, typical type thing here, but seems like they drop shells. So I don't know if I see, I guess the moral of the story is if you see Hugging Face on your stuff, then don't let it hug your face. Yeah. Weird. Yeah. Okay. Hackers behind the Change Healthcare ransomware attack just received a $22 million payment. Good for them. The transaction, which is visible on Bitcoin's blockchain, suggests the victim was one of the worst ransom attacks in years, may have paid a very large ransom. So how does this go into the whole thing about we're not letting people pay ransoms? The ransomware attack targeting medical firm Change Healthcare has been one of the most disruptive in years, crippling pharmacies across the U.S., including those in hospitals, leading to serious snags in the delivery of prescription drugs nationwide. Now, a dispute within the criminal underground has revealed a new development in that unfolding debacle. One of the partners of the hackers behind the attack points out that those hackers, the other hackers, I guess, a group known as Alfie or Black Cat, received $22 million transaction. Looks very much like a large ransomware payment. So you've got bad guys talking shit about bad guys on the underground. On March 1st, a Bitcoin address connected to Alfie or Black Cat received 350 Bitcoins in a single transaction, or about $22 million. Then 2 days later, someone describing themselves as an affiliate of Alfie or Black Cat, one of the hackers who work with the group to penetrate victim networks, so part of their affiliate group, posted to the CyberKernel Underground Forum RAMP that Alfie or Black Cat had cheated them out of their share of the Change Healthcare ransom, pointing that the publicly visible $22 million transaction was there as proof. That suggests, according to Dmitry Smilyants, the researcher for a security firm Recorded Future, who first spotted the post, that Change Healthcare has likely paid the ransom. A spokesman for Change Healthcare, which is owned by United Health Group, declined to answer whether it paid. Well. And they said, we are focused on the investigation right now. If Change Healthcare did pay the $22 million ransom, it would represent a huge payday for Alfie or Black Cat, but also a dangerous precedent for the healthcare industry. I would agree with that. But here we are back to square one of, if you're a healthcare organization or critical infrastructure or whatever, a small business, and you've been ransomed, who's the government to tell you not to pay? Do I give a shit if United Healthcare lost $22 million? Absolutely not. Couldn't happen to a nicer group of people. But does it matter to me that I literally right now, there are family members of mine that depend on medication that might not be able to get it because of these fuckers that are doing this stuff? Absolutely. Pay the ransom. Now, we shouldn't let them get off, but we're not going to be able to arrest them. The odds of us actually prosecuting those folks is basically zero. But what's the deal? Like, would you rather have people not be able to get their medical treatment and medications and United Healthcare loses $22 million or take a stand and say, we're not going to pay that? Actually, let's see what United Healthcare earns in a day. So United Healthcare, United Healthcare daily income. So let's just see what they earn in a given day. The operating income for United Healthcare Group is $32.358 billion. Do the math on that, how much that breaks down to per day. It's a 13.8% increase from 2022, where it was 28.48. So for them, $22 million, that's not even on the spreadsheet. Like $22 million bucks, okay, cool. So, I mean, I guess the question to me, and please tell me what you think or I'm wrong or whatever, but if it's a critical infrastructure or a healthcare org or whatever, I don't think that the government should be able to say you shouldn't pay the ransom. I think you should try not to pay the ransom. I think you should have controls in place and all those other things and whatever. But if it boils down to whether or not people, children, whatever, are getting a critical service that will keep them potentially alive or healthy, pay that fucking ransom. I mean, I don't see how you can argue against that. Now, maybe on the far end, we know where these guys live. Guaranteed we do. Send a, you know, small payload like missile. I don't know. But do something. So everybody that goes online and on LinkedIn and whatever says that no one should pay the ransom and no ransom shouldn't get paid. Like, eat it. If it's your family and you've got somebody that needs medication, they can't get it because of this, you will be okay with them paying a ransom. $22 million for a company that does 30-something billion dollars a year, not even a problem. Plus, think about how much they bill us. I'm a United Healthcare member. I know I've got a pretty high premium. I've never been to the hospital, knock on wood. So, I mean, yeah. And if you're saying, oh, well, it's going to drive up healthcare costs, whatever, they're already going up. They go up anyway. $22 million, again, do the math, shouldn't affect that at all. It's just an excuse for them to raise rates. Ransomware operator Lockbit relaunches dark website. That didn't take long. After Operation Kronos, Lockbit leader says Lockbit is back up and hacking. So Russian-speaking ransomware operator Lockbit has reestablished its dark web security presence on Saturday, right after they were shut down, basically. Their leader vowed not to retreat from the criminal underworld. In a lengthy missive, the Lockbit leader said the FBI appears to have used a vulnerability in web scripting language, PHP, to penetrate the ransomware as a service operators, blah, 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 because 5 years of swimming in money, I became very lazy, is what the bad guy said. That's how they got hit. So I guess there's some positive stuff for the CISOs out there, is even Lockbit people get pwned. Law enforcement did not take down backup servers that didn't have PHP installed, Lockbit said. All FBI actions are aimed at destroying the reputation of my affiliate program, my demoralization. They want me to leave and quit the job. They want to scare me because they cannot find and eliminate me. I cannot be stopped. You cannot even hope as long as I am alive. I will continue to pen test with postpaid, whatever. So, I mean, there's the bad guy literally saying to the FBI, nice try. You didn't really make much difference, but kumbaya. So, yeah. This is why I say that you should never say that you shut them down. You pissed them off. You might have made them reallocate, but you didn't shut them down. Security Week, Edward Kovacs, remote Stuxnet style attack possible with web-based PLC malware. A team of researchers has developed malware designed to target modern PLCs in an effort to demonstrate that remote Stuxnet style attacks can be launched. Okay, I would say that's probably pretty cut and dry. I do have the paper here, and I'll throw that in the link as well. So the researchers are from the Georgia Institute of Technology, who do great work. They published a paper detailing this as a part of an ICS security project to demonstrate the risks. Researchers developed what they called web-based PLC malware. So somehow this will leak out on the internet. which resides in the controller's memory but is executed client-side by the browser-equipped devices present in the ICS environment. So there's your weak point. The malware can abuse the PLC's legitimate web APIs to cause disruptions to industrial processes to damage machinery. The new PLC malware can be easy to deploy and difficult to detect. Initial infection can be done through physical or network access to the targeted web-based HMI, but the malware can also be deployed directly through the internet by hijacking the HMI using cross-origin vulnerabilities. And they have a little diagram in here. So pretty simple stuff, been around for quite a while, but they've modified it specifically for PLCs. How long will it be till this particular proof of concept malware leaks out? I would give it weeks, but we'll see. Forbes has an article, Bob Zukas, companies are already not complying with the new SEC cyber incident disclosure rules. Shocker. The U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission finalized new cybersecurity disclosure rules in 2023 to improve investor transparency over cybersecurity risk and the actual cybersecurity incidents impacting their investments. Disclosure requirements now span certain corporate governance and management processes and information about material cybersecurity. That's called the 8K. Some well-known companies have made cybersecurity incident disclosures since the new rules, which is a bunch of big companies I won't even name here. However, there's a problem with those disclosures. Here we go. None of them are compliant with the new SEC cyber incident disclosure rules. Let me say that again. None of those reports are compliant with the new SEC cybersecurity incident reporting disclosure rules. Under the new rules, SEC registrants are required to make a disclosure within 4 business days once an incident is deemed notable by the company or material to be material to a reasonable investor. There's your word, reasonable investor. So if a company's information systems go down because of an internal systems failure, the company determines that the incident is material to a reasonable investor because the company can no longer process transactions, for example, they must make a disclosure under the new rules. So basically what this is saying is that there's no way that these organizations are abiding by that 4-day timeline, which for those of us that know the space have said since day one that that was freaking stupid. You're never going to be able to say with 4 days that you've determined it, you found it, and you've reported it, whatever. Like that, the reporting rule makes a hell of a lot of sense. The 4-day thing, just whatever. And so what are you going to do? Are you going to fine them because they can't do it that fast? No one can do it that fast. So more stupidity. Kali Linux is out again. I have the new version. It's super cool. If you haven't played with this stuff, I think it's fun. Kali Linux 2024.1 release. It's got new hacking tools. I'm going to read you some of the new stuff here. Let's make sure. So it's got introducing Micromirror free software CDN, which is pretty cool stuff to play with. High traffic projects, additional bandwidth and optimized storage. Theme refresh, whatever. Nobody's genome shell enhancements, which is cool. The EOG image viewer has been replaced. There's some new tools in here too. So Blue Hydra, which is a Bluetooth device discovery service. Gonna have a lot of fun with that. Read PE, command line tools for manipulating Windows PE files. That'll be blast. And of course, Snort's in there. There's also some updates for how to get it and install and configure. And again, I'm not telling you to play with this stuff and go cause problems, but I'm just saying, theoretically, you could, and there is a new version of Kali out on the streets. So yeah, maybe go get you a new Kali. Article in VentureBeat, Louis Columbus, who does great work. The 5 most alarming cyber threats from CrowdStrike's 2024 Global Threat Report. And again, I'll throw the link to the report in here as well. So traditional security approaches aren't closing the gap fast enough. Yeah. Attackers are sharpening their tradecraft and are still looking for the weakness areas. Okay, cool. So cloud intrusions jumped by 75%. Good Lord. There was, say, 76% increase in data theft. 60% increase in interactive intrusion campaigns. Not sure what the difference is there. 75% of attacks were malware-free. Yeah. Making them difficult to identify and stop. There was also a 110% year-over-year increase in cloud-conscious cases with scattered spider predominantly driving the activity. Further underscoring just how wide the gap is between where the attackers are from an efficiency standpoint and how effective legacy security approaches are, attackers trimmed 17 minutes off their average e-crime intrusion activity time results. So they're getting faster. In 2023, the average time for e-crime intrusion activity decreased from 79 minutes in 2022 to 62, which left defenders only about an hour's worth of time to minimize the cost. So you have 1 hour from when compromise activity occurs to stop them or bad things will happen. The fastest observed breakout time was 2 minutes and 7 seconds. Tradecraft for these bad guys is progressing significantly faster than existing and legacy cybersecurity solutions can keep up. So, oof, not a good trend. The report's really interesting. CrowdStrike discovered 34 newly named attackers last year, including an Egyptian-based adversary, Watchful Sphinx, and is now tracking more than 232 globally diverse organizations. Yeah, so CrowdStrike's busy. Basically, the crux of it is that bad guys are getting more effective. Here's the five takeaways. So identity-based and social engineering attacks are reaching a new level of intensity. So here I would still pose the question of, why would you do anything else when you're starting your cybersecurity planning posture strategy than take care of identity, access, users, and people on the internet? And oh, by the way, if phishing training were as effective as it's sold to us as, this would not be the case. It continues to get worse. So stop pissing money away down training. It's not a technical control. Cloud intrusions soared last year, growing 75%. Cloud misconfigurations are the number one avenue. So check your stuff, patch your clouds. That doesn't sound right. That sounds kind of stupid, Chase. I don't know. Just don't suck at patching and make sure your cloud stuff is configured correctly. Attackers known for big game hunting are pivoting to data theft and extortion over ransomware. So this is where this extortion stuff comes in. This is where people, you know, pwning dirty pictures and whatever else. Third-party relationships exploitation is also increasing. So again, take care of your third parties. Take care of their ability to access networks. Do all the things you're supposed to do to keep third parties safe, and you'll be better off. And then AI, which again, for the record, it's not AI, but large language modeling. And it's basically allowing organizations to, nefarious organizations to increase their time to market, which is not good for those of us on the other side of it. So yeah, pay attention. Last couple things here. So I may go more than 30 minutes. I apologize, but I've been out for weeks and then I had, you know, the damn internet crept out. So I may go a little bit longer here, but the Sacramento Bee has an article, which I found to be pretty funny. Prominent Sacramento law firm sues for $1 million after falling prey to ransomware attacks. So if you're an MSP, you might want to listen to this. A prominent Sacramento law firm that represents police officers and sheriff's deputies in the capital region is suing a computer firm, an MSP, for $1 million, alleging that after hiring the company to provide cybersecurity, the law firm was hit with ransomware. Mastagni Holstedt Law Firm filed a suit in Sacramento Superior Court this week against Landtech LLC, claiming that because of the cyber attack last year, Mastagni was forced to pay a ransom to regain access to its data. An office manager at Landtech, who would not give her name, declined to comment when reached by phone. Blah, blah, blah. Landtech did not respond. So law firm founder didn't respond either. The lawsuit alleges the attack came a group known as Black Basta, a Russian-speaking group first detected in early 2022 that has been blamed for hundreds of ransomware attacks and has been attributed more than $100 million worth of attacks. Let's see what they did. Okay, so here's where things get sideways. So under the terms of the agreement, Landtech was responsible for the cloud-based backup of plaintiff servers and data, the suit says. On February 24th, plaintiff, which would be the law firm, began to experience connectivity issues when its employees tried to log into the firm's terminal servers. The firm notified Landtech, which reported the problem had been resolved. So they said that he fixed it, something wasn't right. Then 2 days later, the plaintiff, the law firm, suffered a major outage of its servers and computer network, which resulted in loss of access to servers and data, so ransomware event. Plaintiff reported the outage to Landtech, and it was ultimately determined that the law firm's cybersecurity, for which Landtech was responsible, was breached, and that malicious software had been installed blocking access to plaintiff's servers and data. Right. The suit does not specify the amount of the ransom payment or the manner which was paid, but it alleges negligence and breach of contract and seeks $1 million in damage. So I'm going to have to go a little further down the rabbit hole with this one because I want to see how the breach actually took place. But this is an interesting precedent to set of, are you as the MSP liable for your customers getting breached and can they sue you for that? I mean, I guess if you didn't, if there's negligence, like flat out fucking negligence, sure. But then again, define negligence for me in cyber. And if you're out there and you're listening to this and you're like a lawyer person, say something, because this is where things get muddy, I think. I wanted to wrap up with this thing, this blog from Vectra. If you're not familiar with waves and MQs and some of the analyst reports that go on out there, there's basically what happens is, you know, we and I'm saying we because I used to be a Forrester analyst. Now I'm do stuff for G2. You write reports based on your analysis and you do a bunch of stuff, and it takes months to write a wave. It takes months to write an MQ. And there's no way that you're ever going to make everybody happy. And yes, you can rail on the fact that it is kind of, there's a pay to play aspect in some instances, there's a poison well type thing, whatever. But the point is, at some level, there's an analyst who's a human who has sat there, and I don't know the MQ people, but I know the wave people, that have spent a lot of time and a lot of research and a lot of effort to go off and put this kind of ranking together. And they'll stand on their laurels. Like they will stand on their research. Okay, great. A lot of times you'll get companies that they have people that are either AR or marketing or whatever, where they've told the CEO that we're going to be a leader and we're going to do awesome in this report and whatever else. And it doesn't play out that way for a variety of reasons. The question then for those organizations is, what do we do about this? Now, just to give you an idea, like when I was at Forrester writing waves, I dealt with really nasty calls from people. I know for a fact that there's been people that are analysts at Forrester and Gartner that have literally been sued for libel for publishing a wave or an MQ or whatever. So it gets really heated and contentious. Now, the folks at Vectra decided to go, I would call it sort of scorched earth. But I do respect the guy, Kevin Kennedy's approach to this, for at least having the intestinal fortitude to come out and say it. And I also respect Vectra for saying, you know what, like, we feel like they get it wrong. Let's place an argument. Let's be real about it. They didn't do what a lot of companies will do, where they'll send in a CEO or some other big muckety muck and just try and arm wrestle you into submission. So this is Vector's report from Kevin here. So let's see. Forrester released the first Forrester wave on network analysis visibility. This is Forrester's second attempt at assessing the NAV vendor landscape, as the initial wave was canceled due to analyst turnover and the resulting lack of expertise. Ouch. Based on our assessment of the research, expertise in modern threat detection continues to be lacking. So kind of calling somebody names, I guess you could say it. Now here's where it gets a little bit more scorched earth. Forrester remains stuck in a vendor-driven mindset defined by rigid tech requirements based on a fascinating blend of zero trust ivory tower idealism, and legacy technology understanding, which is completely disconnected from customers and the market at large. Wow. Shots fired. Nowhere in the assessment does Forrester take into consideration customers' definition of modern threat detection and response that spans network identity and cloud. The most glaring flaw is the fact that Forrester's methodology puts more weight on integrated decryption than any other criterion. So, like, this is where I start to kind of agree with just the way that this is written. I don't agree with his position or whatever else, but I'm just saying I agree with the fact that they took the effort to go write this. But, I mean, this is what you run into in this, just so that those folks that aren't involved in the back end of research see, is the folks that published the research set the criteria. The people at Vectra decided to participate. They had multiple opportunities to chime out. They had multiple opportunities to escalate and have calls and whatever else, but they knew the criteria. They weren't happy with it. It didn't go the way they wanted. They didn't wind up where they wanted. And now they're, you know, talking about somebody pissing in the sandbox. Now it talks about their methodology repeatedly. So let's read a little more here. So we could list numerous flaws in the Forrester methodology, but we'll focus on the three most glaring. Forrester believes all traffic inside of enterprise is encrypted. I read the report. I didn't ever see any of that anywhere, so I'm not sure exactly how that came out. Forrester contends NAV needs to decrypt defined threats. To a degree, but I would say that that's probably not entirely accurate. Forrester thinks time to baseline is more important than threat coverage for ML and AI. Together, these flaws place a heavy operational burden on customers for little to no value, while badly skewing the characterization of nav towards legacy tech. So yeah, you can go read this stuff. I would say go read the actual report, because other vendors like Lumu and whatnot have licensed that and have put it out, but make your own decisions. I respect people's, you should totally be able to come back and say, I don't agree with this. Cool. And I do respect Kevin's and the company's posture of like, look, let's just say what we want to say. That takes guts. But, is this going to cause anything to happen? No. Is it really that much, earth shattering? No. I can guarantee you the analyst that wrote that wave just said, okay, thanks. And they shit canned this and went on about their day. So just be aware, if you're running a company or a startup or whatever, like I tell my customers and clients that I worked with, it's probably not as good for you to try and participate in a Forrester or Gartner MQ or Wave as you think, because if it doesn't go the way that you want, which is a very real possibility, you will have spent a bunch of money and time and effort and you won't get the result. And then your only option is to be the little kid that's pissed in the sandbox and kick sand on everybody and walk away. It's better not to be in those if you don't really know that you can place where you want to place. And it's subjective to a large degree, so be careful. Anyway, I went longer than 30 minutes, which I don't like to do, but yeah, I had just some stuff to say. So looks like my internet stayed up this time. Hooray, huzzah. If I can help you with anything, please let me know. I will put the links to this at the end. And as always, stay smart, stay safe, stay secure. I will catch you on the next one. Disclaimer, the information in this podcast episode, aka episode, is provided for general information purposes only. By listening to this episode, you understand that this is not specific technical guidance from the host. No information contained in this episode should be construed as security advice from the author, host, or guest, nor is it intended to be a substitute for security advice on any particular subject matter. No listener of this episode should act or refrain from acting on the basis of any information included in or accessible through this episode without seeking the appropriate technical or other professional advice on the particular facts and circumstances that are discussed. This podcast is for informational purposes only. All views expressed therein are those of the host and his guest and should not be considered as being endorsed by nor related to the host or the guest's employers.